Attention, South Dakota residents. Everything is fine. Everything is beautiful. Go back to your homes. Go back to your jobs. Trust in the authority.
Work, eat, stay asleep. Work, eat, stay asleep. Work, eat, stay asleep. Work, eat, stay asleep.
Keeping you docile and distracted during times of uncertainty. This is the South Dakota Department of Propaganda Podcast.
In the recent 2024 primary election, 14 incumbent Republican legislators lost their races. A controversial carbon dioxide pipeline was one of the top issues that emerged during the campaign.
This pipeline, part of the Summit Carbon Solutions Project, is a multi-billion dollar initiative set to collect carbon dioxide from ethanol producers in South Dakota and neighboring states and sequester it in North Dakota.
This project has stirred up quite a bit of controversy over the past couple of years, particularly around issues of landowner rights and eminent domain. These are hot-button issues, especially when it comes to the rights of companies to seize property for projects in the public interest.
Along these lines, several of the losing incumbents endorsed Senate Bill 201's Landowner Bill of Rights, a compromise bill aimed at beefing up protections for landowners while still keeping the pipeline project on track.
That's well noted. Now, coming to the election specifics, there were 44 Republican legislative primary races and only one Democratic primary race. Winners advanced to the November general election. For Senate primaries, only the top finisher from each party advances. For House primaries, it's two top finishers except for split districts where only one from each party advances.
Unfolding in an interesting way were the losses faced by two Native American lawmakers, a mother and son, a former Speaker of the House winning a seat, and several newcomers campaigning on landowner rights finding success.
Indeed. In terms of voter turnout, it was reported at 17%, which is quite low compared to past primary elections.
We also saw losses by veteran legislators like Senator Joan Hunhoff and Rep. Byron Calles, who were replaced by newcomers advocating heavily for landowner rights and against carbon pipelines.
Now, while we have discussed several losers in this primary race, not every incumbent who supported pipeline-friendly legislation was ousted. Senate Majority Leader Casey Crabtree triumphed over his opponent in a clear landslide.
We also saw former Speaker of the House of Representatives, Spencer Gosch, make a victorious comeback defeating current House Majority Whip James Wongsness, as a wave of hard-right GOP candidates defeated a number of long-serving incumbents in the primary.
With low voter turnout, at least six moderate Republicans lost their seats, opening the doors for significant changes within the House and Senate.
Notably, Senators Aaron Tobin and Gene Hunhoff both lost to lesser-known candidates. Tobin was considered a rising star within the party, while Hunhoff has served as the head of the legislature's Appropriations Committee for years.
Other notable results include the defeat of veteran House lawmaker Tamara Street John, Representative Tyler Tordson in District 14, and former House Speaker Spencer Gosch regaining his seat by defeating Representative James Wongsness.
On the flip side, Representative Stephanie Sauter narrowly defeated Fred Deutsch to represent District 4 in the Senate. The results were close enough to entitle Deutsch to a recount.
Also worth mentioning is Lee Qualm, a former majority leader and popular target of moderate political activist groups. He too lost, but has the right to request a recount.
This shakeup will undoubtedly lead to major shifts within South Dakota's legislative process. The Southern Poverty Law Center's latest annual report reveals a significant rise in white nationalist and anti-LGBTQ plus activities in the United States, reaching record levels ahead of the presidential election cycle. The report tracked 835 active anti-government groups and 595 hate groups, increases of 133 and 72, respectively, from the previous year.
Indeed, a key contributor was a 50% surge in white supremacy hate groups, marking the largest spike ever recorded by the SPLC. Anti-LGBTQ plus organizations also saw a 33% rise. The report pointed out that these increases are largely linked to the far-right anti-trans movement.
The report also highlighted a trend of hate groups becoming more active in person through events and leafleting, with nearly 7,000 flyering incidents recorded in the previous year. Many of these incidents involved language stemming from racist and anti-Semitic conspiracies.
They're also looking to influence mainstream politics. 9 of these groups support the Conservative Heritage Foundation's Project 2025 manifesto, which outlines aspirations for anti-abortion, anti-free press, and anti-LGBTQ plus priorities.
The states leading in numbers of anti-government and hate groups include California, Florida, Texas, Pennsylvania, New York, Virginia, Georgia, North Carolina, Washington, and Ohio, with California at the top.
The report also touched on the growing influence of extreme Christian nationalism as a driving force behind these anti-government organizations. And finally, while hate groups are on the rise, the report did note a decline in the militia movement following Department of Justice prosecutions related to the January 6th Capitol attack.
A notable piece of news comes from South Dakota, where voters in 3 counties, Gregory, Haucon, and Tripp, rejected proposed bans on tabulator machines for vote counting in favor of the current election system.
These measures were petitioned onto the ballots by citizen groups in an effort to switch to hand counting. But the majority of voters were not in favor. In Gregory County, 54% voted against the petition. In Haucon, 61% were against it, and in Tripp, 57% voted against.
Gregory County Auditor Julie Bartling expressed her confidence that these results accurately reflect the county's trust in their election process, stating that she believes they still have confidence in the tabulators and the work we do here.
On the other hand, Tripp County Auditor Barb DeZursa mentioned this felt like a burden lifted. However, she does not expect the issue of election security to disappear despite voters being well informed about the process.
Interesting, isn't it? But it's important to note that this hasn't changed the perspective of everyone. Steve McCants, one of the lead petition circulators for Gregory County, acknowledged that they lost this battle, but insisted the war for hand counting continues.
Lastly, it's worth mentioning that Fall River County chose to voluntarily hand count ballots in Tuesday's primary, becoming the only South Dakota county to do so. Their results were made public on the Secretary of State's website at around 11 p.m. that night. Tuttle is petitioning to legalize recreational marijuana use in South Dakota, having collected enough signatures to place the measure on the November 5th ballot.
This triggered a 30-day window for challenges to the petition's validity. It's worth noting that this is the 6th measure to qualify for the statewide ballot, and 4 of these were citizen-initiated.
This marijuana measure would allow individuals 21 and older to possess, grow, ingest, and distribute marijuana. However, there are restrictions like a possession limit of 2 ounces and a maximum of 6 plants per person.
Interestingly, South Dakota voters had approved recreational marijuana in 2020 along with medical marijuana, but the recreational aspect was invalidated in court.
To qualify for the ballot, the measure needed 17,508 signatures from South Dakota registered voters. The Secretary of State's office estimated that petitioners collected 22,558 ballot signatures.
I'm hungry as hell and craving a spud. Got an awful thirst with my bestest bud. Ask the boys at Snock if they're nice and hot. 'Cause I'm in the mood for come on my tots. Yeah, these tots got spunk, covered by a hump. Oozing with that gum, dripping out his junk. Well, they're steaming hot, smothered the whole lot. Take another shot and come on my tots. They're salty and sweet, really good with meat. Yes, think it's pretty neat. But he likes to beat. Pair him with a dog in the parking lot. 'Cause I'm in the mood for come on my tots. Yeah, these tots got spunk.
covered by a hunk, oozing with that gum, dripping out his junk. Well, they're steaming hot, smothered the whole lot. Take another shot and come on my tots.
In downtown Sioux Falls, South Dakota, a vibrant pride flag has been raised high on the tower of the First Congregational Church. And it's not just for Pride Week in the city or Pride Month worldwide. It's up there all year round.
That's right. This flag is a beacon for those who may feel there aren't enough people in their faith community or city who accept and affirm their gender identity or sexual orientation. According to Pastor Becky Pagan, seeing this banner on such a prominent historic church can feel validating.
Now, it's not just First Congregational Church showing support. The United Church of Christ in nearby Mitchell also displays a sign featuring the LGBTQ plus rainbow pride ribbon, though it was recently vandalized with graffiti of Bible verses regarding repentance and same-sex relationships.
That must have been disheartening. However, Pagan stated that her church would assist with cleanup efforts and offered support. They even started a GoFundMe page to aid in graffiti removal.
It seems this sort of vandalism is part of the reason First Congregational Church hangs its pride banner so high on its tower, so as many people as possible can see it. Additionally, the church has applied for a hate crime grant from the Department of Homeland Security to prevent vandalism.
Despite receiving online threats because of its overt support for LGBTQ plus inclusion, the church continues to show love for this community. They participate in the Pride Parade every year along with four other Sioux Falls ministries.
While there are still challenges and room to grow within other religious communities, such as the Methodist and Catholic churches, many continue to advocate for love and acceptance over exclusion.
Speaking of which, Pastor Sawyer Vandenhoevel, South Dakota's first LGBTQ2S+ ministry leader and an openly gay associate pastor at Street Marks Lutheran Church, spoke about how seeing churches show up at events like these can provide healing and joy.
This year, Vandenhoevel will preside over a pride service involving several other Sioux Falls churches, a march in the parade representing the Evangelical Lutheran Churches of America, ELCA.
Their banner during the parade and their festival booth merchandise will prominently display three powerful words, God adores you. It's a beautiful message that no matter what others may say or do, God's love is unwavering and all-encompassing.
That's right. Despite the challenges and opposition they face, these look-friendly churches continue to serve as beacons of inclusivity and love within their communities.
They're excited for President Trump to win the presidency a third time and enact his agenda.
Are they talking about the border wall, tariffs? That's what they're excited for?
No, I would say the vengeance. Total and utter vengeance. One woman I met, Irene, retired nurse, she said that she hopes that Trump will, quote, split the skies and rain fire upon the states of blue, his terrible blade sundering his enemies until nature herself bows before his dominion and his name is carved upon the moon. End quote.
The highly pathogenic avian influenza, also known as H5N1 or bird flu, has made an unexpected leap from poultry flocks to cattle herds and even humans. This has prompted the mobilization of federal authorities and a heightened state of alert among dairy farmers throughout the United States.
It seems that the virus, which was initially considered a threat primarily to birds, is now found in other animals as well as humans. So far, three cases have been diagnosed in dairy farm workers, with one showing respiratory symptoms. While the risk to public health remains low according to officials, they're keeping an eye on developments.
This outbreak has involved numerous government agencies and agricultural organizations, highlighting the complexity of combating bird flu. The USDA has carried out over 17,000 tests on cattle across 9 states, finding 67 affected herds.
It's not only cows and humans that have been affected. The strain of bird flu has been detected in several domestic cats, which led experts to advise pet owners to limit their pets' contact with wild birds and farm animals.
The USDA has also announced a pilot program to intensify testing on dairy farms. By testing milk samples from bulk tanks for H5N1, the aim is to gain better insight into the spread of the virus and facilitate interstate transport of dairy cows.
However, there's some hesitation from farmers to test their herds due to the potential restrictions on their operations if their cattle test positive. This raises concerns about the true extent of the virus spread.
Besides testing, other measures are being implemented for farm worker safety, including provision of personal protective equipment and efforts to build trust so workers feel comfortable getting tested for H5N1 or reporting an illness.
Speaking of safety, while milk purchased from grocery stores is considered safe as it has been pasteurized and thoroughly tested, people are cautioned against drinking raw milk for now.
It's also interesting that this avian flu can change similar to how the flu changes, leading to a different flu shot each year. Experts are closely monitoring H5N1 since more people may have contracted it and didn't realize due to its mild nature.
In summary, while the risk to public health from H5N1 remains low currently, there is an urgent need for close monitoring and comprehensive testing strategies across industries and species to keep it in check. The main topic of the day is the upcoming 2024 ballot amendment in South Dakota, which aims to codify abortion rights in the state constitution. Known as Constitutional Amendment G, a recent scientific poll co-sponsored by South Dakota News Watch and the Cheeseman Center for Democracy at the University of South Dakota has shown growing support for this amendment.
This poll surveyed 500 registered voters and found that 53% support this amendment, which would reverse the current state abortion ban enacted when the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Only 35% opposed it, with 11% undecided. This is quite a shift from a previous poll in November 2023.
Indeed, and interestingly, the poll revealed that even 46% of Republicans polled support legalizing abortion in South Dakota. Rick Weiland, co-founder of the grassroots organization sponsoring the amendment, Dakotans for Health, believes this is indicative of more people engaging with this contentious issue.
However, not everyone is happy about this potential change. The Life Defense Fund, an anti-abortion group, disagrees with the amendment's provisions and believes that as more information becomes available, opinions will shift.
The amendment comes as South Dakota operates under a state trigger law activated in June 2022 that makes abortion a felony unless it's to save the life of the mother. This proposal aims to prevent state regulations on abortion during the first trimester, regulate it reasonably in relation to maternal health during the second trimester, and only allow third trimester abortions to preserve the life or health of the pregnant woman per physician's advice.
We also need to note that there seems to be some confusion among voters about the specifics of the proposal. Julia Helwage from Cheeseman Center suggests that this might be due to compromise language in the proposal, which can make it complex or even confusing for some people.
That might be a valid point. Yet despite differing opinions and the complexity of the issue, supporters argue that this amendment aligns closely with Roe v. Wade's original framework. On the other hand, opponents like Rep. Hansen express concern about potential late-term abortions allowed under the amendment.
Weiland calls these concerns scare tactics, pointing out that late-term procedures are very rare where abortion is legal. According to CDC data from 2020, fewer than 1% of U.S. abortions took place at 21 weeks or later.
There are some interesting demographic details as well. Support for the measure is equally strong among men, and women and highest among young voters aged 18 to 34. The majority of support comes from East River North Region, followed by Sioux Falls Metro, and both East River South and West River.
So all eyes are on South Dakota as we get closer to November. But isn't just South Dakota grappling with this issue? Similar measures will be on ballots in Arizona, Florida, Nevada, Colorado, and Nebraska.